Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 51 of Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. The Mets have won 8 in a row. The Yankees continue their inconsistent hitting. We pay tribute to Bobby Mercer and a big Sports Heaven birthday wish to Kaya Gallagher, who turns 29 today. And in just a few minutes, we have a very interesting interview lined up for you with the Bayshore Brawlers. More on that coming up next, episode 51 of Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. An excellent show lined up for you tonight. We'll also be previewing the All-Star Game. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Branoff. And like Mark said, welcome to a very special episode of Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan, episode 51. And boy, is it going to be hard to follow up last week's amazing episode.
It certainly is, but we're going to do the best we can. And, you know, we like to stick to New York sports. But today, for the first few minutes of the show, we have a little something different, something that you certainly don't usually see on this show, and probably something that you've never seen before. In about roughly 4 minutes from now, we'll have the Bayshore Brawlers on. Now, anybody in the area where we do the show, which is Jericho, New York, you may have heard of Bayshore, but we're not talking about Bayshore on Long Island. We're talking about Bayshore in New Jersey. And there's a football team. Even though they're based in New Jersey, they are actually part of the Pennsylvania Football League, a league where they play 7-on-7. The players do not get paid. The players play in schoolyards. It's really something very bizarre. And we're going to have the public relations guy, Jake Zajcik, I believe is his name. He's going to be coming on. He's the public relations guy for the Bayshore Brawlers. So we're going to talk a little bit about the league, talk a little bit about the team, and their opening day is coming up this Saturday on July 19th. So an extremely bizarre league, and it should be an interesting interview.
Yes, it does sound bizarre, but it does sound very interesting. I mean, nice small field. I'm very interested in going and checking out a game. So we'll learn about the league when Jake comes on the air, and hopefully we can go check it out sometime.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure a lot of you out there are asking the same questions we are. Why would they play for free? Why do they play in schoolyards? How can players commit to playing for free? And those are the questions that we have lined up for Jake Zajcik, and we're going to ask him, you know, why do people play for free? I mean, it's really ridiculous, and the Bayshore Brawlers are actually back-to-back Keystone Championship winners. The championship for their league is called the Keystone Championship, and I believe they've been in existence for 2 years, and in those 2 years, they've won the Keystone Championship both times. We'll verify that when Jake comes on, but...
Mark, you say, why do they play for free? It's for the love of the game. If you love the game, you play for free. Hopefully they can...
To be able to commit to that, I mean, every single week to go out there and play your hardest for nothing, I mean, and the
Mark,
question that
make,
I really...
Mark, do you make money doing the show?
No.
You come out here for the love of the broadcasting, and you do the show. That's what it's all
right,
about.
But I have yet to get a bruise from it, though, so...
I'll punch you the next time we're on air.
All right, so any minute now, we should get him on. And after the interview, we'll talk about the Mets, we'll talk about the Yankees, we'll talk about the All-Star Game, we'll talk about Bobby Mercer. And then we will wrap up the show, and at 8:20, Alan Moy will be joining us, another appearance by him. We haven't spoken to him in a while. He's finally coming back. And,
yeah, so sad what happened to Bobby Mercer. Just such a shame.
It really is, and what a great guy he is, and yes, really paying tribute to him. And it is currently 8:05 on my clock, so we should get a call very shortly, and I believe he's with us now. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Public relations man of the Bayshore Brawlers, Jake Zajcik. And Jake, are you with us?
Yes, that's me, and you said it correctly.
All right, that's good, and it's great to have you on. Now, before we get into the Bayshore Brawlers team, I want to talk about the league that you're in first. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this is the PFL 6,
yes.
And it's 7-on-7. The players play for free. You're playing in a schoolyard. I mean, what is this league all about?
Well, basically, the league was created 4 years ago as a kind of a fly-by experiment kind of an idea. And it's grown from there, and basically most of the teams are in extremely rural areas throughout Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just for players who, I would say, 3/4 of the league coming out of high school, attending college but not playing football in college or working to give them a shot to play football. And the other, I'd say, about 1/4 is people that have either played college football in some time or older men that have maybe gone throughout the ranks, sort of to say.
So I'm sorry, Evan. Go ahead, Evan.
What is the age range of the players playing this game?
I would say it's kind of grown more of older players in their 20s. You have some players still 19. I would say you have everybody, mostly in the 20s and the 30s. So it's competitive. They're athletes. They're not out of shape. So probably the 20s and the 30s.
Hmm. So where exactly do the players come from? Are there open tryouts? Do they get recruited? How does that work?
Well, every individual team does it differently. Basically, we have a lot of connections with flag football teams in the area. So we kind of take some of their best players. But yeah, every team has an open tryout, basically, usually like $5 to participate. And most teams, a lot of just word of mouth. Players telling their friends they check out a game, then the next year you see that friend suiting up.
Oh, yeah. And how many viewers do you guys usually get at these games?
For us or the league?
For both.
It's kind of individual teams are all over the place in the product in general. We have anywhere between, I would say, 50 to 70 people usually there. But we're expecting this year to be a lot more because a lot more promotion has gone into this season.
That's good.
And the league, I would say. Oh, what were you going to say?
Mark?
Go ahead.
I thought you were going to say something. I was just going to ask, down the road, do you see that this is going to turn into a league where players are going to be making money, or is it just truly for the love of the game?
This league is probably going to be probably strictly for the love of the game. But you're probably going to see, and you start seeing some teams do this, more sponsors come in and more revenue through merchandise and concessions. So you're probably going to see the players still not get paid, but more money go into the travel because we don't pay. We help out with travel money, but not every team does that. So you have players traveling usually 2-3 hours sometimes from Pennsylvania to New Jersey, and the teams don't help out with that.
Oh, wow.
Some of them. So you're going to see more of that sort of, and also to that question, you're probably going to see more players get recruited and scouted for more professional indoor football.
Hmm. That's very interesting. Now the Bayshore Brawlers, you guys are in New Jersey, so how did you guys, and you're a relatively new team as I understand it, so how did you become a part of a league based in Pennsylvania?
That's kind of a funny story. Well, basically, we started off as we're going to start a New Jersey league, basically the same rules as the Pennsylvania one. And what happened was 3 years ago, one of the teams dropped out before the Pennsylvania team. They dropped out before the season. And we scrimmaged the team, one of the charter teams of the PFL 6. And they asked if we wanted to go in, and we came in. And teams thought they were probably going to beat up on us, and we ran the table and got the championship.
Wow, very impressive.
Well, thank you.
And we know that you run public relations for the team. Do you play as well?
No, I don't play. I play football, but not for the Brawlers. I'm actually just graduated high school, so I'm brand new to this.
Oh, all right, very nice.
Now, when this league started up, because, you know, they're playing for free and, you know, there's not really any, you know, big football fields that they're playing on, what do they feel would be the difference between this league and just a group of guys calling their friends and playing a game every single Saturday? Like, what's the major difference between the two?
Okay, that's a good question. I would say when the league started, you know, there was a very, you know, there was a very close line between what, like, pick up and that. But throughout the years, it's progressed a lot higher. To teams now, there's practices once, twice a week, off-season training. You see players off-season training, workout, because you have to be in shape to play. You're playing in 100-degree heat, a lot of times unshaded and full equipment, so you have to be in shape to play in this league. So that's probably the biggest one is practicing, and there are people run plays. It's not just going to the huddle, you run to the corner. There's plays, there's defense, there's schemes.
How often do the Brawlers practice?
The Brawlers practice, well, we're a little lighter, I'd say, than all the other teams. We practice once a week.
And you're still able to beat everyone?
Yeah, we practice once a week, but also, I don't know how every individual player runs and that sort of thing.
And all the players also attend school or have other jobs during the day?
Can you repeat that question?
And along with playing for the Brawlers, all the players on the team also attend school or have jobs. This isn't their main thing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's for a main thing, of course. All the players have jobs. A lot of, I don't really know 100% of what the players do, but they all have jobs. I would say all of them almost have college educations. We have a few that are attending college, I believe, right now.
Oh. How long have you been in head of the public relations for the Brawlers?
Well, I've been doing the public relations marketing since the beginning. I've been there since what we were called the Bayshore Celtics.
Oh.
So I've been through the whole roller coaster. I've gotten more duties as the years have gone by because I was only a sophomore in high school when I joined on the ship. So I started off just kind of doing stuff on the website, but now I've kind of progressed into a almost like a part-time job, you can say.
So how did you get to do it? I mean, did you ask them to do it? Did they come to you? How did you become a public relations guy?
Well, I was working with I was kind of just on message boards, indoor football message boards, and one day I've got an email from the team owner, who's down now in Florida. His name is Will Smith, and he goes to me, and goes, "You want to help chip in with the internet a little?" And I said, "Okay, sure." You know, he said, "I can't pay you, but if you're okay with that," and then I said, "Whatever, it's okay." And I didn't really think I was going to last, really, you know what I mean? But over time, I've kind of gotten into it. So that's how I basically got involved with the team.
Very cool. Are there any players on Brawlers or around the league that you can tell us about that you think have potential in football?
Yeah, there's a few. A lot of this potential really is kind of luck almost to an extent, right place, right time. I would say there's a couple players all over the league that have, I would say for the Brawlers, it probably goes down to Marcus Haynes, our tight end defensive lineman, who is just a big guy who can catch the ball. He's probably the guy that if you had to, like, send in film and hoping for someone, that would probably be him. And he's out of Red Bank, New Jersey.
How old is he?
Yeah, that I wouldn't know 100%. I'm going to have to say late 20s, mid-20s. So he might have passed his date with that, but also one of the youngest players on the Brawlers is named Stephon Hixon out of actually Patterson. He's probably he's probably the one that you have to look for in the future, I guess. He's definitely the one that a big offensive defensive lineman who 100% always wanted to play.
That's cool.
Yeah. Now, I have a very interesting question. Now, since these players aren't getting paid and I assume they're not really under any contracts, how can you trust them to actually commit to this league and show up every week? I mean, has anybody ever said they were going to come on the team, maybe made the team, and then just didn't show up to any practices or anything.
Yeah, that happened mostly the first year. You have a lot of players, they don't know what it's about. Oh, that happens the first year. That's more of a question for, you mean like with equipment loss? Or like how that affects us, or?
Well, I mean, they're not really under any contract, so I would think that somebody might show up to a practice and then stop showing up, and then maybe you're a player down or something. I mean,
that's happened to us in the past quite a bit, actually. The way, basically, all these players know each other. They all hang out on the weekends, a lot of them. They all know each other. So it's almost like a lot of times we know if like a player's not going to be there ahead of time. And it's almost like if that player didn't show up, he's going to almost get, like, ridiculed by the rest of the team in a fun way, in a hazing way, but that why he didn't show up. But we've really, with the majority of the top-tier players or starters, we have that very rare. But these players, they come to play for the love of the game. They don't, you know, we have no problems. You don't have anybody complaining about contracts or anything of that nature. So you really don't see that too often as the team has progressed.
Mm-hmm. So are there any Bayshore Brawler cheerleaders or dancers?
We tried for that. We're playing outdoors. So
yeah.
it's kind of hard with the conditions. We were trying to get dancers to come in for the game, but we don't really have the setup for them. But every off season, that's actually like the first or second thing on our to-do list. Dancers, cheerleaders, let's try to get them. But by the time the season starts, it doesn't seem to ever happen.
Well, is there any sort of a halftime show at the games?
Not really. I would not say so. Sometimes you have music going on, not live music, of course, but no, but halftime, it goes by, what happens is you're only a few feet from the field. So a lot of times we've let the kids just toss a couple of the balls around, and after it really, it doesn't really have no halftime entertainment going on.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the playing for a little bit. Now, you guys are back-to-back Keystone champs. What do you feel has really contributed? I mean, you guys are a new team. What do other teams around the league, I mean, look at you as? You know, you just came out of nowhere. You won back-to-back Keystone champs. Yeah. I mean, what contributed to that?
Well, one thing I just want to say, we were actually, when we started in the league, like the elder statesmen, we were actually one of the oldest teams in the league. We've actually gotten younger these past 2 years. Because all these other teams are also very new, too. So we kind of start off as the older statesmen. Funny story, I remember we played one of our first scrimmages, and the team was much younger than us, the Lycans Thunder. And they were asking our players, oh, how did we play? Did I look good out there? Because we have players that were in their late 30s going against kids that were 21. But as the years have progressed, I would probably say the number one key component has been just an ability to do everything, the fundamentals correctly, if you get me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Being able to tackle, to play smart. We play smart football because we have a lot more aged and experienced when you need it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have to buy tickets to attend the games?
What?
Is there a ticket necessary to attend the game, or can anyone come?
No, well, this year it's free admission. We did this for the last 2 years. So basically just park your car and walk up. But I'm not sure about the bleacher situation this year because we do play in the middle of the field. So what happens is bring a lawn chair or a blanket so you can rest. But no admission, no ticket, just walk in, park your car. I just wanted to advise people, if they're attending the home opener, it's also the same time as the end-of-the-year barbecue. We kind of did that on purpose, have a lot of the kids show up for the Little League. So my only suggestion is you might want to arrive a little early for parking. That's my only suggestion.
All right, well, thank you.
So why don't you tell us where the games are played and what time the home opener is and the date of the home opener?
Okay, the games are played at Lawrence Harbor Little League, which is in Lawrence Harbor, New Jersey. And if you go to MapQuest, Google Maps, whichever one you use, I believe you can just type Lawrence Harbor Little League, Lawrence Harbor, New Jersey, and then as your end destination, and it can get you there. The time of the game, the kickoff is 3 p.m. No need to get for parking purposes, but no need. You don't have to get there hours before the game. Just kind of can walk in. And the home opener is this Saturday, July 19th. Yes, the 19th.
All right. So, go on, Mike.
Go ahead.
Huh?
All you.
Well, I just wanted to say I wish the Brawlers the best of luck this season.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having us on the program.
Of course.
And people get more information at BayshoreBrawlers.com.
Yes, that's the place to get all your info.
And one last question before you guys go. How did you first hear our show? I'm just curious. Do you listen to Blog Talk Radio or?
Well, it's going to sound like I'm basically, it's very hard to get semi-pro football, any media attention. So I just searched up Sports New Jersey Radio or Internet New Jersey Radio, and you guys were like the third on the list or the fourth on the list. So that's how I found out about you guys. Listened to a program, this sounds straight up our alley, and then emailed you, and you guys are very friendly.
Hey, well, very interesting.
And I have to say that your logo is awesome. I definitely have to get myself a couple of T-shirts.
Thank you. I get that a lot when I go to the gym. People say, who is that? Nice logo. So it's actually a professional done logo, so thank you.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming on, and your team and the whole league sounds very interesting, and I'm going to do the best I can to get out to some games.
Thank you very much, and great talking to you guys.
Nice talking to you, too, and have a great night.
You too, bye.
All right, so that was Jake Zajcik, Bayshore Brawlers. That's one of the most bizarre interviews I have ever done. We do have Alan Moy on the phone with us. He's been waiting for a while. Alan, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Actually, I'm doing all right. I mean, after watching the Yankees lose today for the second time in three games in Toronto, a little not happy, but I hope they bounce back in the second half.
Yeah, I hope so. But, Alan, I saw you on the line for a little bit of that interview. I don't know if you caught really what was going on there, but What did you hear from that interview? Because honestly, I think that was the most bizarre interview I've ever had. It's a really interesting league. Did you catch anything interesting there, Alan?
Nothing really. He was talking about some kind of game and about the field and whatever. I really didn't really understand what was going on.
All right. Because we have this interview. It's a 7-on-7 football league. They play for free. They play in schoolyards. It's very interesting. A very bizarre interview, but it turned out better than I thought. It was very interesting, but a little off topic from our show. But Alan, now that we have you here, let's get into some New York sports talk, and let's start with the New York Mets. The Mets, they're currently on right now. They're in the bottom half of the first. The Mets, of course, are threatening first and second, one out. There's no score. They've won 8 in a row. They're going for their 9th straight. They've really played well, and in my opinion, the biggest contribution, I mean, they're getting hits, big hits from people you wouldn't expect, Fernando Tatis, Damian Easley. I mean, these guys are coming through. The starting pitching is doing well. Pedro Martinez had a great outing yesterday. I mean, the Mets have been unbelievable.
Also, one of the young stars, Mike Pelfrey, who they're very high on, he's been pitching well as of late, and that has really helped them turn their ball club around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the bullpen's been good. The starting pitching has been good. I can't believe it, but the one thing that might be bad for the Mets is here's a deep fly ball to left field, a 3-run home run. So there you go. The Mets take a 3-0 lead over Colorado. Who was it? That was Carlos Beltran.
Beltran was up.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets are really hot lately, but the worst thing that I feel they have coming for them is the All-Star break. You have to hope that the All-Star break does not ruin their momentum. They'll be off. Their next game is on Thursday after tonight. And, you know, hopefully for Mets fans and the Mets, that doesn't hurt them.
Well, yeah, of course. You don't want to go into a 3-day break when you're in a hot streak like that. But on the other hand, you could also say they've played extremely well lately. 8 straight wins. They are going for their 9th win in a row, leading 3-0 right now. But they hope that if they do win tonight, they'll have a 9-game winning streak. and some confidence going into the break and getting some rest and getting them recharged for the second half of the season.
Yeah, I agree with Alan. I do not think that the All-Star break will hurt them, because I think that they're going to go into the All-Star break just getting refueled and re-energized to keep the streak going. I think there's a better chance of them keeping the streak going with some rest, assuming that they win tonight, than continuing going night after night just because that's so tiring. So I think that the All-Star break, since not a lot of the Mets are going, I think they have two players in Billy Wagner and most recently David Wright. So they're all going to be able to rest up, and should be a very interesting second half of the season with that division.
And plus, the Mets will have a very favorable schedule coming off the break. They'll be at Cincinnati for four games, and then they'll be taking on the team who they are chasing right now for the Eastern Division. That is going to be at home next Tuesday, starting until Thursday, against the Philadelphia Phillies. So those two series are going to be very big for the Mets coming off the break, and they would hope that they could get at least five or six wins out of those teams and climb atop the Eastern Division.
Yeah, and I guess you have to credit now Jerry Manuel, who stepped in as the interim manager after Willie Randolph was fired, and now he's on this hot streak. I mean, a lot of Mets fans really like him. He fires up the team. He gets thrown out of games, and it seems like it's really working for them as of late. I mean, it's just all around good things coming out from the Mets.
No question about it. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the Mets officially have a better record than the Yankees, which disappoints me. But even though the Mets were always, even though the Yankees always had a better record, the Mets were always closer in the division. But now not only are the Mets closer in the division, but they have the better record. So the Yankees really have nothing for bragging rights over the Mets right now.
But there is one thing you could brag about. The Yankees host the All-Star game. That's all you can say. The Yankees are hosting the All-Star game. That's what everybody is going to be talking about for the next couple of days.
That is true.
And, you know, the Yankees are hosting the All-Star game. We'll talk about the All-Star game certainly later on in the show. And the Mets right now, you know, what's really interesting is, you know, they're one game back in the division right now. So if they win today, I guess that would put them, I don't know if that would be a tie or a half a game. I'm not sure how Philadelphia did today. But they're right there heading into the All-Star break. And I think the break might get them really
Philadelphia won today. So if the Mets do win, they'll only be a half game behind Philadelphia.
Right. So they'll be a half a game behind Philadelphia. And going into the All-Star break, you know, maybe it won't kill momentum and they'll be really ready to go out there. You know, during the break, they'll be saying, I want to get out there and get that half game out, get that half game away and take the lead over Philadelphia, because they're going to be now stuck for a week, a half a game behind, and they can't even play. So they might be really ready to get out there and take over first place in the NL East.
Mm-hmm. This would be great to see. At least one New York team is going to be in first place, assuming that the Mets can get that extra half game. But it is not looking good for the Yankees, who, even though the Devil Rays have been struggling, the Yankees have been struggling as well. So it'll be nice to have one team in first place. One team is doing well, at least in New York. Unfortunately, it's not the team of my choice, but at least there is a New York team that is playing well.
It's not the team of any of our choices. Here's one thing that frustrates us Yankees fans, is that whenever the Devil Rays were losing the past couple of games, the Yankees lose at the same night, and they were never able to keep pace with the Devil Rays. That's been the problem. Also, the Red Sox, they've also been losing games, but the Yankees are not keeping pace with the Red Sox either. They have to win these close games as well against Toronto, and then they got teams like Seattle coming up next, and the Yankees aren't even playing in the clutch right now.
Their hitting has been totally inconsistent. It's very interesting, the situation with the Rays right now. Everybody, you know, the question the whole year was, are they for real? Are they for real? Approaching the All-Star break, they have lost seven straight. And, you know, hopefully the All-Star break for them. They'll take a little rest and go back to the Rays that we saw earlier on in the season, and now the Red Sox have passed them, and they're in first place by half a game. But the Yankees right now, very inconsistent hitting. Today they faced A.J. Burnett, who's pitching on 3 days rest. He goes 8 1/3, only gives up one run. I mean, you have to take advantage of a pitcher only on 3 days rest. And Andy Pettitte had just one bad inning. He gave up 4 runs in the second inning, and the Yankees just could not capitalize.
I don't really understand how the Yankees could make a struggling pitcher look like a Cy Young Award winner. A.J. Burnett, of course, in the past, he's had excellent seasons with the Florida Marlins. He was an All-Star. He was the candidate for the Cy Young Award winner a couple of times, but this year he has not been really consistent. He had an ERA of over 5 coming into the game, and of course, as you said, he was pitching on 3 days rest, and the Yankees just made themselves look bad against a pitcher who's been up and down this season.
Yeah, he really has. A.J. Burnett has always pitched well against the Yankees, though, it seems like, of course, in the World Series. And, of course the injuries have hurt the Yankees, but you can't come out and score 9 runs one day and 0 the next day. I mean, you have to consistently hit, and the problem is, you know, the Yankees used to have these guys that you wouldn't expect them to get hits. I mean, you know, Chuck Knoblauch coming up or, you know, whoever it was. You just had these little guys that were able to get hits, and now you have these guys, you know, you have Jason Giambi who's going to be up there to try and hit a home run, and either before or after him, Alex Rodriguez who's going to be up there to try and hit a home run, and, you know, maybe Jorge Posada who's going to try and hit a home run. I mean, you don't have these guys that are just, you know, you try to do the best you can with Brett Gardner. I mean, with the injuries, you have to play him anyway. You hope that he could slap a few hits, but he's been struggling. I mean, they don't have those guys that could just get up there and get a rally going.
That's their problem. I mean, all they worry about is getting a home run, just waiting for a home run and no situational hitting. That's one of the reasons why A-Rod only has 50 RBIs this season, because he's been lacking the clutch hit. He's only hitting like 210 with runners in scoring position, and he's got to do better for the Yankees to play well.
I mean, it looks like Cano's sort of starting to come around. I mean, he hasn't been dead like he was really early on in the season, but Milky can't get a hit, and Derek Jeter sometimes can't. I mean, he can't get a clutch hit. It's just so bad, and they can't get a rally. It's very, very frustrating.
And even if they do put men on, they are struggling this season with the bases loaded and with runners in scoring position. So they have to get a consistent clutch hitting in clutch spots. And plus, their pitching. Their pitching has to be consistent as well. I mean, today Andy Pettitte pitched he didn't pitch so badly. He had just one bad inning. But one thing that they have to do as well, their starters have to get at least 7 innings and try to rest the bullpen. Sometimes I see their bullpen is being overused at times, and that can be pretty scary at the end of the season when you're facing teams like the Red Sox or Tampa Bay, when you have to chase them for the Eastern Division.
And I have noticed that Evan has left us, so we'll check back with him next week's show. And the other thing, you know, you bring up the bullpen, though. The bullpen's been great, and if I heard it correctly on the game today, coming into today in the last 11 games, they had pitched like, they had like a 1.66 ERA,
yep.
Something along those lines. So the bullpen's been very good, but if you remember back the other day, one of the players that has been very good, Jose Veras, and Joe Girardi kept on using him, and he brought him in the other day, and he gave up a home run. And, you know, that's the problem you have, and you're right. You need to get those starters, you know, the 7 innings, so that way you don't keep overusing those guys. But the bullpen has done a good job. And, you know, you could complain about, you know, you have Ponson in your rotation, and, you know, you could complain about that, but it's really the hitting that's the problem. The pitching hasn't been that bad at all. Ponson hasn't been horrible.
No.
It's really the offense. And, you know, hopefully the rest during the All-Star break could help them out, and they could come out in the second half really strong.
Well, we can only hope. Or another thing that you could hope for is wait till the trading deadline comes and see who they pick up at the deadline. They're still looking for pitching. And, of course, Sidney Ponson, even though he's not pitching badly lately, but he's had bad history of struggles and inconsistency. You wonder how this consistent pitching will last. I mean, he's pitched three consecutive games. They're all quality starts, but who knows how long that's going to last before he starts to struggle again. That's why I think they're looking for a consistent, solid pitching at the trade deadline.
Well, you know, the big talks that we're hearing is they're going to get a guy possibly like Randy Wolf. You know, he's no CC Sabathia, but hopefully a guy that could really help out. But they're not going to get anybody too much better than the caliber of a Randy Wolf, which really is unfortunate. But you know, with the all the injuries they have, you might see them go out and try and get another bat as well, because you know, that's really where they've been struggling. And with all the injuries, you really have to do something about it. And the Yankees got Bobby Abreu when somebody was injured, and, you know, he's done very well, and he's still with the team. He's the starter now, and I could definitely see the Yankees going out and getting another bat. I just really don't know who.
Also, if you're also talking about trading, getting players from other teams, what if you think about trading guys away? I mean, Melky Cabrera was off to a hot start in April and May, but since then he has been really struggling. He couldn't get a clutch hit. He only had one home run in the past, like, 2 months. You wonder if he's on the trading block to try to get someone valuable.
It's certainly a possibility, because even though he's very good defensively, you know, it might not be enough to keep him. And Melky Cabrera certainly is one of the guys who we could see go. Just want to let all the listeners out there know, if you want to talk to us throughout the show, AOL Instant Messenger is working this week. You could IM us, GMen 1021-1780, or call us at 718-508-9443. And if you have a Blog Talk Radio account, you could, of course, always talk in our Blog Talk Radio web chat. All right, so what else is there going on now with the New York Yankees? They're still carrying three catchers,
which
is very interesting.
They got Mueller, who can't play defense. He doesn't have a strong throwing arm. Offensively, he's been up and down, but nonetheless, though, they have a backup catcher who can do some hitting, and a backup catcher in Jose Molina, who really can't buy a hit, but plays very good defensively and throws out base stealers.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees have these players in Melky Cabrera, Jose Molina, I mean, you could say Betemit if you want to, but who are very good defensively, and they can't get a hit. And that's really been the biggest problem for them. Jose Molina does pretty much gun out any single person who tries to steal on him, no matter how fast. But they need another bat, because Joe Girardi needs to start giving all these days off. I mean, you can't see Molina and Betemit in the lineup every single day. It gets very repetitive. And after the All-Star break, I don't want to see anybody with a day off for at least 2 weeks. And I don't think he'll do it, but if he tries to pull something like A-Rod and Jeter, who were in the All-Star game, if he wants to give them a day off, I will not be happy if he chooses to do that. But the Yankees do have an extra day off. A lot of teams starting on Thursday. The Yankees are starting on Friday. So that should be good for the team.
And also next week, after the All-Star Week, which is the 24th, they have a day off on a Thursday before they head off to Boston to start a three-game series against the Red Sox. So hopefully that could help them as well.
Yeah, you have to beat those teams that are in front of you. That'll really do it. That's how you're going to gain ground. So that, you know, do you have anything else to add with the Mets or Yankees?
Well, yesterday one of the Yankees in the Yankee family lost one of their great ones, and that, of course, former outfielder and broadcaster Bobby Mercer, who died after a two-year battle with a brain tumor.
Yeah, that was, I mean, a very unfortunate loss. Yes has had, I mean, the whole post game yesterday was based around Bobby Mercer. Today, everything on was about Bobby Mercer, and tonight's lineup, they just had the life of Bobby Mercer on at 7. Now I believe they're showing center stage with him. After that, they're showing Yankeeography, Bobby Mercer, and then they're showing the life of Bobby Mercer again. So they've really been paying tribute to Bobby Mercer. On today's broadcast, they had Michael Kay call in, Jim Cott call in. And during the game, you know, the game was going on, but it just didn't matter. They just kept interviewing guys and talking about Bobby Mercer. And It's really a big loss. Nobody hated the guy at all. Everybody's going to miss him, and it's just very unfortunate what happened with him.
I grew up watching Yankee games, obviously, as a Yankee fan, and I've always watched Bobby Mercer when he was on Fox 5 and Channel 11. And, of course, when the network moved to YES, I've always listened to him do play-by-play, color commentary, and all types of broadcasts, and he is a very nice guy. I mean, there's really no other, like, broadcaster who's better to listen to than him. He speaks well about every team and every player, and I've never heard any negative stuff come out of his mouth about anybody or any team.
Yeah, he's really a great guy, and it appears as though we have Evan back. So, Evan, I don't know how long you've been gone, what you heard, but if you have anything to add with the Yankees Mets or about Bobby Mercer, feel free to step in.
Yeah, I've been, I lost signal a while back, but then I've been on there about 10 minutes now, but you haven't been checking the switchboard, I guess. But anyway, yeah, about Bobby Mercer, that's just so devastating. He was just such, he was a great player. You hear what everyone has to say. Everyone is just so choked up when talking about him. He puts everyone before himself, and it's just very sad to see that he's gone. He died very young. I think he was 62.
62.
Yep.
Yeah, and I was watching SportsCenter today, and they were just saying how even cancer, he fought it like it was a game. He fought it like it was a ninth inning, two outs, and you were facing Mariano Rivera in the bottom of the ninth, and everything was just a challenge. I heard the day after he had his big surgery for his brain tumor, he was still very giddy, happy, just enjoying life. And it's so sad, and it's so weird that one day we're listening to him on the radio, on the air, and then the next day, he's gone.
And yeah, you're absolutely right, and, you know, he always had a very positive attitude, and I actually tried to email Kenny Albert before the show, because I don't know if he had any relationship with Bobby Mercer. I mean, they both worked for Fox. Kenny hasn't gotten back to me, unfortunately, but, I mean, really a great guy. Everybody has so many nice things to say.
Yeah, and before, with what the Yankees could do to improve their lineup, I heard you guys talking, but I wasn't able to talk at that moment, is that Richie Sexton, I think they're going to get Richie Sexton. He's going to really help the lineup.
Yeah, I heard the rumors about Richie Sexton. He's certainly not the player he used to be. He is very good against, I believe it's right-handed pitchers.
Yes.
So hopefully that could help the Yankees out a little bit.
Yeah,
and
I think he'll be a good batter to have in the lineup, especially with all these injuries. That's another thing, that the All-Star break is really going to help out the Yankees, because it'll help rest up all these players that are injured.
Yeah, it certainly will, and they won't miss any other extra days, any extra games with the All-Star break.
And very shortly after the All-Star break, we're going to get Ian Kennedy back, maybe Hughes, Matsui, Damon. So, you know, the Yankees have been playing with a lot of players out, and hopefully when all these players come back and the Yankees realize that it's do or die, they'll wake up.
Well, that's the thing with the guys who has been here before, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Jorge Posada. They know when to wake up, when it's down the stretch and when it's important. And when the postseason comes, they know when to shine. So let's just hope that they all rested up. And, of course, talk about resting. Jorge Posada, who had shoulder problems earlier this season, it gives him time to rest. And he doesn't even have to throw the ball or even have to practice, maybe. You just sit down and rest, and that could help him defensively if he were to go back to catch.
I just feel like their mentality is that they're going to make the playoffs no matter what, and there's no panic in them. They're just not turning the switch on. They're just, in the back of their head, they know they're going to make the playoffs, and I don't like that attitude. Like, last year, you saw panic. When they were behind at this point of the season, you saw them panicking. You saw I remember Johnny Damon talking on air saying something's got to change. This year, you just don't see that. It seems like they don't even care right now.
Well, I don't know if it's that they don't care, but you don't really sense a little bit of urgency. It's really a big problem with the injury that's really hurting them right now. And before you mentioned Ian Kennedy, Joe Girardi has expressed that Ian Kennedy has to earn his way back. He's not just going to come back when he's healthy. So that's something that we certainly have to watch for as well, to see if he does well in the minor leagues. Otherwise, he's not going to earn his spot back.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully when all the players come back, that'll help the Yankees, and who have really struggled this season due to injury. Unfortunately, it's just something you can't help. But, you know, there's teams like Boston who have had Ortiz out, a lot of pitching out, and they just always seem to shine. So it's the teams that who have backup players that can step up and fill in for the stars, that it's those teams that have those players that really make it in this league through the long 162-game season. And the Yankees just apparently don't have those players this season.
That's the thing with the Red Sox, Dave. Other than Manny Ramirez, he's not really having a typical Manny-like season. He's only got 17 home runs, when usually at this point he'll hit like 20-something home runs. But not just him, but of course Ortiz has been out with an injury, but also Dustin Pedroia and also Kevin Youkilis and Mike Lowell, those guys have been hitting like crazy. They've been hitting for average. They've been hitting in the clutch, driving in runs. Those guys are stepping up when Ramirez and Ortiz have not been around, and also their pitching has been amazing. Daisuke Matsuzaka has been there for them, Tim Wakefield, Josh Beckett, and they got the young star Clay Buchholz, who's been pitching extremely well. So they've got a complete team over there in Boston.
That is true, sorry, Mark, but then they have players like J.D. Drew and everyone else in their lineup that steps up to step in for David Ortiz when he's gone. The Yankees, even though the player's injured, you don't see anyone step up. You just see everyone having the same season, and the Yankees just need players that can step up and come up big for them when other players are out.
And you know
what? Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Mark, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the Yankees, I mean, they really have a weak bench. I mean, when you have Betemid and Moeller coming off the bench, I mean, it really gives you nothing. And the Red Sox are similar to the Mets, where the Mets have Pagan hurt, Alou hurt, Church hurt, and, you know, it's the Fernando Tatises and the Damian Easleys who are able to step in, and then their bullpen with Feliciano and Sanchez, the starting pitching, I mean, they've been able to step up, and the guys on the bench for the Yankees just cannot do that, like Evan said.
You know, one thing with the Yankees is that because of they have a weak bench, and they really couldn't go down to the farm and call some outfielder or any infielder up, because in the past 10 years, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but in the past 10 years, they spent most of their draft picks on pitching. They were looking at top pitching in the past 10 drafts. That's why they really haven't had much of an offensive star down the farm. If you go to Scranton or if you go to Staten Island or any of their minor league farm clubs, they don't really have a highly powerful hitter who could come up and deliver a clutch hit for the Yankees off the bench.
Yeah, look what this has done for them. All we have is Jabba. Who else?
Robertson has stepped up well in the bullpen. So Dan Geis. So it's really the pitchers. But the Yankees do have a guy, Austin Jackson, who's supposed to be a pretty good hitter, an outfielder. Unfortunately, though, he's not really ready yet. He's still very young, and he's not really major league ready yet, but eventually he'll be very good. But unfortunately, they can't call him up at this time. So, Alan, you're right. And the Mets are in the same situation where they can't call anybody up. We were speaking to Jason Stark on our 50th show. The Mets didn't even have anybody on their 40-man roster from their minor league system up until about 2 weeks ago. But the Mets have had the bench to be able to step in, and the Yankees just do not.
Now, one thing that I never really understood is that I don't understand why the small market teams usually have the better farm system. Like teams like the Twins and teams like Tampa Bay, if you have less money, I would think that your farm system should be worse, but you don't have the money for the facilities and the coaches needed to bring up a good basis of players. And then teams like the Yankees, wouldn't you think that they would have a better farm system with the more money?
Well, here's the thing. It's not really about the money. I mean, if you go to, say, a team like the Twins or the Kansas City Royals, or if you go to another small market team, maybe say the Florida Marlins, let's say they have a star player. It's a good example. Dontrell Willis and also Miguel Cabrera. Because they don't have the money, they couldn't pay Willis and Cabrera when they're heading into the free agent season. And so that's why before they become free agents, they would trade them away and they get value. They get draft picks and they get prospects. That's why they have better farm systems.
That is true. But then look at a team like Tampa, though. All they are is these prospects. Who's a big name star? Name a player that makes over $5 million a year on that team.
Yeah, but here's the thing with the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays don't have the money to sign big time free agents, so their only choice is to develop their young players. So they take their coaches and they work with them. They're making the top picks, and as Alan said, they're trading for draft picks. They don't have the money to bring in any big time guys, so their only option is to go to their farms, and they have to develop them. They're not going to trade them away either. Because if they're making a trade, they usually have to pay for the incoming player's contract, and they don't have the money to do that either.
Now, there's been talk, there's been some speculation about adding a salary cap to the MLB, and now I'm just wondering, what do you guys think about a salary cap being added to the MLB?
I personally think that they should add a salary cap because, I mean, the players certainly aren't going to like it, but, I mean, you have these players where you feel like they have so much more interest in the game at a younger age, and if they become good, these teams throw millions and millions and millions of dollars at them, and it just, I mean, that's really where their interest lies. It lies more in the money than it does in the game of baseball, and as a fan, I think that becomes very frustrating, and it would be much better if there was a cap, so that way you wouldn't have that issue where these people are just, you know, millions and millions. It's like unbelievable how much money these guys make. I think
well,
it causes them to lose interest a little bit.
I totally agree with you. I mean, if you go back, if they don't add a salary cap, I think they'll have a lot of off seasons that are like the 2007 off season, if you guys remember. The Kansas City Royals spent a lot of money on Gil Mesh, a guy whom is not really a star pitcher. A slightly better than mediocre at best, but they paid him like an all-star. Also, you look at Barry Zito and the contract he signed with the Giants. Do you think he really deserved all that money from the Giants? Absolutely not. And also,
I agree with what both of you are saying, but that has nothing to do with the salary cap. I mean, yes, maybe they don't have interest once they make all this money. I think that's the salary cap. It's so teams like you can't hear from all these fans that the Yankees all they do is buy all these players. This way, everyone will spend the same amount of money, and you'll truly see who can create the best team with the amount of money allotted. And it's not a matter that you pay someone a lot of money and they don't deserve it. It's just a matter of it'll be money management now, and it'll be nice to see if the Yankees truly are an amazing dynasty that can win even. They have the same amount of money to spend as the other teams.
Well, I mean, it works like that, but the thing is that that's my point. I don't want the Yankees to be able to just buy players. I want them to have to max out at a certain, you know, part of their team, obviously, and, you know, you can't keep spending that much money because you'll have a cap. And then you won't be forced to spend as much money on them, and the players won't be making as much money, and I think they'll enjoy the game much more and play better.
Absolutely, and also that would create like a chess match for general managers at trading deadlines and also during the off season to say, okay, who's got the better value for your team? How much is this guy making, and who could be possible free agents in the off season who we could sign after we trade this guy away? Just like what they do in the NHL, it's a chess match, and that, I think, will create a lot of excitement through general managers and the fans if they do add a cap.
But you guys are saying that they'll enjoy the game more if they make less money. Why does making less money create more enjoyment for the game?
Because it's the same thing that we just had with the Bayshore Ballers. I mean, they are playing solely to enjoy the game. They're not playing because people are throwing money at them.
Yes,
they're
playing for the love
because
of the game,
they
but
love
I'm sure
the
they'll
game.
Still love the game as much if they made money to do it.
I know, but they're gonna regardless. A-Rod could go 0 for 500 next season, and he will still make the same amount of money. It's just, and that's,
all right, and if,
I don't know if that's
salary was $10,000, and if his salary was half the amount, he could go 0 for 500 next season and still make the same amount of money. It doesn't matter if he loves the game or not. I mean, the money isn't taking away his love for the game. That makes no sense. If you started making hundreds of dollars to broadcast, would it take a lot of broadcasting? Do you love it more because you don't make money?
If I was under a contract and I was making money no matter what, I wouldn't continue to care as much and have that deep devotion, because I know that I'm getting my next paycheck regardless of what happens. And
when you know you're not getting a paycheck no matter what happens,
then I know I'm doing it because I have the passion to do it. I'm not doing it because somebody's throwing money at me.
Mm-hmm. But why, when you're making money, you won't like it anymore? It makes no
sense.
Like,
it's almost like you're being forced to do it. They're saying, listen, we're paying you millions of dollars to do it, so do it. I'm not going to say, no, I won't take the millions of dollars to do it. I'm just going to sit here and be a bum and make no money. I mean, you're going to do it because
you're proving yourself wrong.
How am I proving myself wrong?
You're saying that you would take the money and enjoy it. So all I'm saying is that, hi, Mark, I'm a big-time agent.
It's very hard to...
I want to give you $1,000 for every single show of Sports Heaven and Mark and Evan. All of a sudden, now you're under contract. Are you not going to enjoy doing the show anymore?
It's very hard to explain the mindset. The bottom line is I would like a salary cap in Major League Baseball.
The bottom line is the salary cap will create balance in talent in all 30 Major League teams. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's why I want the salary cap, not because people lose love for the game because they make more money.
All right, so now we have this show scheduled to go 90 minutes. I don't know if we'll use it, but let's talk about the All-Star game coming up on Wednesday. I know, Evan, you're going to the home run derby tomorrow, and you'll report back for that next week and tell us how that went. But let's talk about the All-Star game. American League, National League. Alan, why don't you start us off? Tell us what you got. Who do you think's going to win? What's going on there?
The American League has dominated in the past 11 All-Star games. Really, they won 10 of their last 11 All-Star games. One of them was a tie, of course, back in 2002. And their pitching has been phenomenal. Here is the list of their pitchers.
Right.
Justin Dukeshire, Roy Halladay, Scott Kazmir, Cliff Lee, who is probably going to be the starter. He's been amazing. He's had a 2-point-something ERA. And, of course, you got Irvin Santana, Joe Saunders, and in the bullpen, that's just lights out. Joe Nathan, Jonathan Papelbon, Mariano Rivera, Francisco Rodriguez, and, of course, you got Joaquin Soria from the Kansas City Royals. That's a dominant pitching lineup right there. Who could shut down.
Sounds like an all-star pitching rotation, huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, of course, they have excellent hitting as well. They got Milton Bradley who's going to start. Josh Hamilton, who's been a big story for the Texas Rangers. He leads the American League with 93 RBIs. We'll see how he does in the All-Star game, but he could be in the clutch if the American League puts runners on base. Of course, you got A-Rod, who's played extremely well since coming off the disabled list from his injured leg or whatever would happen to him. And then you got Derek Jeter and Dustin Pedroia, Kevin Youkilis, Joe Mauer, Manny Ramirez, and, of course, you got Ichiro, who will be setting the tables for the big guys like Manny and Hamilton. So I really think the American League is going to win it again. And plus, they are playing for a home field advantage for the World Series. And the American League so far has not lost since that format has been put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the American League always seems to be more dominant. I think that they'll win too. Should be great. You mentioned Josh Hamilton, a great story. He's had substance abuse problems in the past. He seems to have gotten over that. 21 home runs, 93 RBIs, and a .313 average this year. He'll also be in the home run derby. I mean, what an excellent story Josh Hamilton is. And, the American League certainly has some exciting guys there. Some of the reserves I don't really understand. I mentioned it a couple of times. Jason Varitek. I mean, he's probably among the worst catchers in the American League, if not all of Major League Baseball.
Also, Deanna Navarro was selected as the backup catcher. He's from the Tampa Bay Rays, of course, but I don't think he really deserves an all-star selection, but really, who else is better out there to be a backup catcher? Posada has been hurt, and he hasn't played enough games to be selected, so there's really not much out there in the American League.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way, but, I mean, Jason Varitek does not deserve to be on the all-star team at all. He is a league-leading worst in average among catchers. I mean, it's terrible. He does not.
And then you look at players that you think should be on the team, like Jason Giambi.
I actually felt he's put up better numbers than Evan Longoria. I felt he should be in the All-Star team. He just hit a home run today against Toronto, and that's his 19th homer. He's put up better numbers than Evan Longoria. I felt he deserves to be in the All-Star game this season.
But of course, you have to remember that the All-Star game ballots, I mean, not those, extra guys picked by the coaches or whatever, but, I mean, Giambi was on the final ballot, but he could have been selected, but the All-Star team overall is selected by the fans, and fortunately, Yankee fans just did not give him as many votes as Ray fans gave to Evan Longoria, but Longoria has been spectacular this season, no doubt about that. But Giambi should be there.
And another player that I feel that joked was Mike Mussina.
Mike Mussina, I felt, should have been in there. The pitcher, yeah, he's pitched, even though he's had an up and down start in the beginning of the season, he has been his old dominant self in the past month and a half. I really felt he should have been in the All-Star game.
Yeah, Mike Mussina definitely deserves it. He's been one of the more consistent pitchers on the Yankees. He's been unbelievable, but unfortunately, Yankees were gypped out of that selection as well. Let's shift over into the National League, unless either of you have anything more to add to the American League.
Let's go American League. I hope they win, just in case the Yankees do turn around. The home field advantage sure will be nice, even though home field advantage the last few World Series has not meant anything, considering they've been very lopsided.
Yeah, it should be very special being held at the final season at Yankee Stadium. So let's move into the NL roster. They'll be starting Giovanni Soto at catcher, Lance Berkman at first, Chase Utley at second, Hanley Ramirez at short, Chipper Jones at third, Ryan Braun, Kosuke Fukudome, and Matt Holliday in the outfield. And they should have Brandon Webb starting on the mound. And, of course, that seems like an all-star lineup as well. So, Alan, we'll start with you again. What is your take on the National League lineup? Get us started here.
I think they're going to start with Tim Lincecum of the San Francisco Giants. And what a story it has been for Lincecum. He is drafted by the Giants in 2004 or 2005. And look at him. He's shot up through the majors already. He's been lights out for the Giants. And today, he pitched the Giants to a win against the Chicago Cubs. I really think that he should be the one who's starting in the All-Star game for the National League at Yankee Stadium.
I'm not going to argue with you, but I'm pretty sure it's already been determined, right? That Brandon Webb versus Cliff Lee?
I'm not too sure. I'll have to look at that, but I heard rumors about Tim Lincecum, but I think Brandon Webb should also be one of the guys or one of the candidates who will be starting for the National League.
I'm going to look that up right now if I can. I'm pretty sure it's already been decided, though. But Tim Lincecum really has been great this season. I know Chris Russo, Giants fan on WFAN, loves the guy, as he should. I mean, he's really been unbelievable. I mean, he just kind of came out of nowhere. But what an excellent pitcher he's been. And then some of the other pitchers that they have there: Aaron Cook, Ryan Dempster, Dan Haren, Ben Sheets, Edinson Volquez, who's really been unbelievable for Cincinnati, Brandon Webb, Brian Wilson, and Carlos Zambrano. And in the pen, Brad Lidge, Billy Wagner, and Kerry Wood. So So it should be very interesting. A bunch of good guys there, and
I can't believe Terry Wood is turning out to actually having a very successful year.
He really has that, and because of past injury problems, he has been moved to the bullpen. But you know what? He's been staying alive now, and he's pitching extremely well out of the Cubs' pen. And him and his Cubs are one of baseball's best teams. So, and I think he deserves to be selected to the All-Star game as a reliever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Billy Wagner. Here's one thing about Billy Wagner. He's been lights out in the first 2 months, but in the past month and a half, he's been on a bit of a struggle. He blew a couple of leads in the ninth inning, and also he's been giving up a couple of huge runs to the opponent. Do you guys think he really deserves this All-Star selection?
No.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't. He blows way too many saves. He gives up way too many home runs. He has no right being there. I mean, he has shown his good side. He got a save the other day, I believe, with the 3-0 win with Pedro pitching. But he gives up way too many home runs and blows too many saves to be in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Evan?
I agree with both of you guys. I don't think he deserves to be there. I mean, all I hear is blown save, Billy Wagner. And in past years, he's always been a bend-but-not-break closer. He always lets up base runners. He very common that you see first and second before he even gets the first out of the inning. But now he's starting to break, and teams are taking advantage, and he's lights out whatsoever anymore. He says that he wants to play one more season after this season, and then no more enter Sandman
at
Shea Stadium.
Or City Field next year, really.
Yeah.
Enter Sandman is Rivera's song, definitely.
Yeah.
In New York,
I
belong to Rivera in New York.
I agree with you on that. But he says that he's always had that song, and I'll believe him.
Whatever.
He's had that song when he was in Houston, and that it was true.
Yeah,
the Mets are Yankee wannabes, so let him have the song.
Just want to let the fans know, top half of the fourth, Mets coming in with 8 straight wins, and they are leading again 4-0, so they might win 9 in a row and go to within a half a game behind Philly. I mean, the Mets have been a heck of an unbelievable team as of late, and you got to give credit to Jerry Manuel, and I don't know if he'll be back next year. I think the Mets still have to go pretty far for him to get the interim taken out of his name.
Or his job title.
Mm-hmm.
But also, credit the players as well, and of course, as everybody says, sometimes you play better when you like the coach or the manager. The players did not play well under Willie Randolph because a lot of them did not like Willie. Now, with a guy like Jerry Manuel, of course, he's been a manager before. He won the Manager of the Year in 2000 with the White Sox, and I think he's much better manager than Willie Randolph, and the players like him. I think that could be the reason why the players are playing a lot better lately than when they did with Willie Randolph.
Yeah, Billy Wagner actually was speaking to Jason Stark the other day of ESPN, and he had told Jason Stark that when Willie Randolph was there, he thought it was too Yankee-like, where they couldn't have music on in the bullpen, they couldn't have kids around. I think Billy Wagner also said that they couldn't have facial hair, but, I mean, Carlos Delgado has it, and I don't really know if that was an issue with Willie Randolph, but Billy Wagner said it was. But I guess that's just an example right there that Billy Wagner certainly did not like Willie Randolph, and I guess he likes Jerry Manuel better.
And also another guy who didn't like Willie that much, and that was Jose Reyes. And he was struggling earlier in the season as well, and now he's starting to hit better. He's starting to heat up, hitting home runs, stealing bases as he usually does, and he's been getting on base under Jerry Manuel. So there's another example of how a manager can change the whole team around.
Absolutely right. So, Evan, let's start with you. Predictions. What will be the score of the All-Star game?
I don't know. I think it's going to be pretty low scoring. You know, I'm going to go 5-4 American League.
Alan?
I would say 6-3 American League.
6-3?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to say it'll be 9-7 American League, a little higher scoring. That's my prediction. I think the big offensive players will outdo the big starting pitchers or relief pitchers as well,
also,
for that matter.
There's one thing that could help the offense is that there are lots of left-handed hitters on both teams. You got Lance Berkman, the switch hitter, but he's better left-handed, and you got a short porch in right field at Yankee Stadium, and of course you got guys like Fukudome and Chipper Jones, who is better left-handed. Those guys for the National League and for the American League. You got guys like Ichiro, and he hit an inside-the-park homer last year in San Francisco. And, of course, you got Josh Hamilton, who is a left-handed hitter. And those and the short right field porch should favor them offensively.
I'm talking about that short right field porch. Tomorrow night I'll be sitting in the bleachers at the Home Run Derby. So
center field?
I'm not sure exactly, but I hope that will be insane.
It should be. Evan, do you think anybody's going to hit the facade?
I doubt it, but you never know.
Alan, you think anybody has the capability to do it?
I think they will. Of course, the pitchers are not going to throw 100 miles an hour. They're throwing it straight down the middle. Some even lob the ball. They're just going to crush them. I mean, if you look at the home run derbies of the past, guys hit the ball like 500 feet or even 600 feet. And even in a real game, a couple of weeks ago at Yankee Stadium, Carlos Delgado smacked a grand slam way up there in the right center field bleachers. That almost reached the back wall behind the bleachers. I couldn't really say no to the guys in the home run derby if they do hit the facade.
Yeah, but it's actually easier to hit it further with a 100-mile-per-hour fastball as to a 60-mile-per-hour pitch that they'll probably be getting in the home run derby, just because that much speed coming in is that much further going out.
If you put the physics into it, that is true. But I mean, you could just talk about physics strictly. But obviously, watching past home run derbies and seeing what the guys do, Alan's right. They crush it 600 feet. I mean, they do it all the time, and that's not going to be any different this year. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're going to hit 5 home runs in a row off the facade, but it is possible that one of the players one time might hit it off the facade. You can't rule it out.
I wish that Giambi said he would do it, even though he didn't make the All-Star team. I just said one Yankee was in it at least. But
and I kind of think he might be doing a smart thing himself, because there's lots of talks about how the home run derby ruins a power hitter's swing. And you look at Jason Giambi, he participated in the home run derby many times in the past. He even won a home run derby title back in 2002 in Milwaukee. And to be honest, that really hasn't affected much of his swings, because the next year, 2003, he hit 41 homers. Then the injury-plagued season in 2004 and 2005. And now he's coming back to hit 19 homers at this part of the season. So but nonetheless, though, for the most part, most of the time if you participate in the home run derby, it does affect the second half of their season. So I kind of think he's doing the right thing here.
Well, here's my take on it. Now, Jason Giambi said that he doesn't think it will affect his swing because he has an uppercut swing anyway. So Jason Giambi isn't one of those players that has the issue with it. But one of the players who does is David Wright. And David Wright really thinks it would affect his swing, but the last time he was in the home run derby, he had a better second half than first half, so that didn't play true. And also, in my opinion, I don't think that a couple of at-bats in the home run derby can really ruin years and years of the same swing that you've been having. I mean, the same swing that you've learned since you were a kid and all throughout the major leagues. I cannot imagine that a few at-bats in the home run derby would completely erase everything you know about hitting. I can't see it.
I think it really depends on who it is. You look at what happened to Bobby Abreu several years ago when he was with the Phillies. He won the home run derby contest, and then, since then he has not been, power-wise, he has not been the same, but nonetheless, though, for some people it can affect their swing. But I really think it depends on who you are, really.
Not only did he win the Home Run Derby that year, but he hit a ridiculous amount of home runs. I think it was in the 40s. It was incredible. I was looking up last night past winners, and usually it's in, like, the 20s. He hit, like, 47. It was just a ridiculous Home Run Derby. So,
yeah, it could definitely depend on the player. But, I mean, when you look at players, David Wright really fascinates me, because for him to say it ruins his swing, and the last time he was in the Home Run Derby, he did better in the second half. I mean, I don't know what he's basing it on to say that it ruins his swing.
Well, it could be both ways, because last year was the year you were talking about where he was in the Home Run Derby and he had a better second half. But 2 years ago, when the game was in Pittsburgh, he was in the Home Run Derby, and he had 22 homers in the first half, but only 6 homers in the second half.
I just wanted to say I'm going into a tunnel, so I'm going to lose you guys, but I'll leave you guys for the last 15 minutes of the show.
I don't think we'll get there. We'll probably wrap it up right now anyway.
Yeah.
Unless you guys have anything else to add, but we'll wrap up the show right now. Sports Heaven with Mark and Evan is a sports radio show created for informing the public of the latest sports news and insights. Our show is broadcast over the internet through Blog Talk Radio from Jericho, New York. The views, comments, and statements of our interviews and guests do not necessarily reflect that of the host. We do not also claim ownership of any material used on the sports show or on the website, including voiceovers, musical pads, instrumentation, effects, team logos, league, and team names otherwise stated. If there's anything you wish to remove, email us, sportsheavenwithmarkandevan@yahoo.com. You could also email us about anything else there throughout the week, sportsheavenwithmarkandevan@yahoo.com. You could also check out our official site, sportsheavenwithmarkandevan.webs.com. Last week, if you missed our 50th episode, we highly recommend you go to sportsheavenwithmarkandevan.webs.com and listen to it. That's Mark with a K. 3 hours, 5 guests. We had Bruce Beck, Jason Stark, Jim Baumbach, Alan Hahn, and Kenny Albert. And on our official site, you can listen to each interview separately, so that way you don't have to listen to the whole 3-hour show to hear it. So definitely visit our official site at sports7withmarkandevan.webs.com. Alan, we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. You did a great job, as usual.
Thanks,
Ben. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again in the very near future.
Absolutely.
It's always a pleasure having you on the show, Alan. So thanks for coming.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me on.
Of course.
All right, so that was Alan Moy. And again, thank you to the Bayshore Brawler for coming on, giving us one of the most interesting and bizarre interviews we have ever had on the show. If you missed that, listen to that on the archive. Of course, Sports7 with Mark and Evan .webs.com. So much to do there. Don't miss it. And that pretty much does it. We'll be back same time, same place, same great show next week, live from Jericho. I'm Mark Elliott.
And I'm Evan Brandoff. See you next week.
See you next week here, Sweet Caroline. Please enjoy it and visit our official site.
That's what she said.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Night, and it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? One, touching one, reaching out, touching.